Today, Sis takes us on a pardoning encounter with Jesus. Firstly, Catherine brings us a reading from John 21, 1-13, followed by Sis on our encounter with Jesus.
I'd like to read now from God's Word, and I'm reading from John chapter 21, and I'm commencing at verse 1 to verse 13. John 21. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened this way: Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael of Canaan in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two of the other disciples who were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them. And they said, "Well, we'll go with you." And so they went out and got into a boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. And he said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing a full net of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire burning coals, there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some fish you have just caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of...
Again, as I've said, biographies have always interested me. And so, yeah, I just want to look at, as it were, three chapters in the life of Peter as we share this time together this morning. And I believe that as we do so, that God will come close to us and reveal more of himself that relates to you and me personally. Again, as Kathy reminded us in the kids' time, Jesus knows us by name. There's a personal thing between him and you and me. And I hope that we discover something more of that personal encounter this morning. The first chapter begins, as it were, in John chapter 13. So I'm going back to the time of the Last Supper. And there we have Jesus and the disciples all gathered together in that place. It comes to a point where Judas leaves, and Jesus then says to that group of people, chapter 1, yes, Jesus says, "The time has come for the Son of Man to enter into his glory. I will be with you only a little while longer. You can't come where I'm going." Peter seems to be the sort of person who thinks out loud. You know, he doesn't work out what he's going to say before he says it. It just comes out. And so he says, "Why can't I come with you? I'm ready to die for you." Mark tells us that Peter continued, "If everyone else deserts you, I never will." And in the context of those strong, bold affirmations, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, this very night, you will deny three times that you even know me." Peter's response, "No." You can imagine his reaction, can't you? "No, never. Even if everyone else goes away, I will never deny you." Jesus then again lovingly turns to Peter and says, "Peter, Satan has asked to sift each of you like wheat, but I have pleaded in prayer for you that your faith should not fail." "I have pleaded in prayer for you, Simon." That's a pretty awesome thing, isn't it? I think it is. I think it's in that sort of context that Paul, when he asked the question, who can separate us from God's love, comes to that conclusion we've talked about here before. Who can separate us? Virtually no one, nothing in heaven or earth, etc. Because God is for us. And Jesus, who died for us, is at the place of honour at God's right hand and is interceding for us. It's written in the plural, but it's personal, isn't it? So for you and for me, Jesus is interceding for us. It's a present tense thing. It's not something that belongs just to Peter and Jesus' conversation. Paul is writing, quite a few years later, and is coming to that same conclusion. Jesus is interceding for us. One of our poets a few years back wrote these words: He knows my name. He knows my need. For me, he lives to intercede. I cast on him my every care. He hears and answers my prayer. He knows my name. He knows your name. And he lives. He's alive. He lives to intercede. And so just as Jesus prayed for Peter, Jesus prays to the Father for you and for me. I can't imagine what Jesus' prayer might be like. I pondered this over and over again. But I sense him saying something like, I died for Jim, for Mary, for all the names that you and I have. And him saying to the Father, that person is precious to me. Father, today, be their strength. Father, today, be their joy. Today, Father, be their refuge. Whatever it is that's needed, Jesus prays that. And he says, Father, Abba Father, he, she is your child. Father them today. So I really can't fully imagine what Jesus might be praying. But Jesus today intercedes before the Father for you and for me. Move on to another chapter in Peter's time. Following the arrest of Jesus, only a few hours after this earlier chapter, we have the first stop after the arrest was in the house of the high priest. And amongst that crowd, we have John, who's gained entrance to the house. Somehow, John was known. I've got no idea how, but he was able to go in and be in that context of the house where Jesus was about to be interrogated. As John looked around and became part of that crowd, he noticed Peter outside at the gate. And so John did what I would regard as a quite natural thing. He went over to the woman who was at the gate and said, can you let Peter in? And so he was invited in. Obviously, John was known. Obviously, they knew John was a disciple or a follower or a friend of Jesus. And so it was quite easy for him to simply say, can you let Peter in to join me as well? John notices Peter and makes that arrangement for Peter to join them on the inside. So what's her natural question? She knows John, knows he's an associate of Jesus. And so she says to Peter, are you one of his disciples as well? What could be more natural than that? But Peter's answer is something that is quite different. Three times Peter is asked this sort of question. And we're all familiar, I guess most of us anyway, are familiar with these events. We hear them recounted each Easter, one way or another. Three times that sort of question is put to Peter. Are you one of his disciples? I thought I recognised you from the garden. And three times Peter denies that he knew Jesus at all. And then we come to that final point where the rooster crows. And Mark records when the rooster crowed, Peter remembered Jesus' words and he burst into tears. Just a few hours, 2 or 3 hours at most, earlier, he'd been boasting, full of self-confidence, that he would never, never go against Jesus. Everything about his position then was suddenly shattered. And it wasn't just that he said he didn't know Jesus. He knew deep down that somehow or other, he virtually killed his friendship with Jesus. You know those sort of scenarios. You know, you get close to people and you say the wrong thing or you do the wrong thing. And all of a sudden, a friendship, there's a barrier there. For Peter, he knew it was more than a barrier. He'd virtually killed that friendship that he had with Jesus. Which brings us to chapter 3. And the reading Catherine brought to us earlier sets the scene for this third chapter. The fish have been caught, the fire's burned, they've had their barbecue breakfast on the beach. A group of 8 men suddenly begin to stroll along the beach. It's a natural sort of thing. You know, you have your brekkie, you know, you do it. What do you do then? You go for a walk. And so I could imagine this group of men suddenly deciding that they would go for a walk. Or Jesus suggesting, let's go for a walk, guys. Okay, and it was home territory for them. They were quite familiar with it. And so they set out, occasionally talking in conversation, sometimes just walking quietly, still trying to work out, again, some of those dynamics that were in the song Dolly Parton sang. What's ahead of us? We know Jesus is alive, that we've got all that evidence. He's here with us. But there's something different. What does our future hold? And as they walked along that beach, I could imagine all these questions and all these thoughts going through their head. And as they walked, I could imagine, as would happen with any large group that starts to walk along the beach, you end up in groups of 2 or 3 or someone by themselves. That happens, doesn't it? Yeah. And so amongst these 8 men, I could see them breaking into a bunch of small groups. And as they walk along the beach, Jesus attaches himself to Peter. They walk quietly. Peter's mind is in a turmoil, just like the rest of the disciples. And particularly because he's walking alongside Jesus. What does all this mean? What is this person thinking about me? What does Jesus feel about me? I could imagine those questions going through the mind of Peter. Peter doesn't want a conversation particularly. But then Jesus breaks the silence. And he asks a question. I could imagine him sort of saying, I've got a question for you, Simon. And he begins, Simon, son of John. It's almost like Kathy's, you add the two names together. You know, there's something going on here. It's not as if you're called by just your Christian name. But yes, it's the two names that you have are linked together. And I can imagine Peter thinking, this is going to be a deeper meaningful. You know, it's personal and it's Simon, son of John. He's not calling me Peter the Rock this time. What am I going to be asked about? It's going to be personal. The approach of Jesus is always personal. He knows each of us by name. That chorus I had up earlier, he knows my name. He knows my need. For me, he lives to intercede. He knows your name. He knows my name. So what is it? What's this question that Jesus wants to put to Peter? Do you love me more than these others do? Now we need to understand what sort of question this is. And you've heard many times here, and if you've attended other churches, listened to other preachers over the years, they remind us that the English word love that's translated in our English Bibles has a range of different words that cover it in the language of the New Testament originally written in. And the word being referred to here is a very significant one, agape. It means something like intentional spiritual devotion. It's a difficult word to pin the actual definition down, and I'm not going to go down that road at all today. But it's intentional. It's a word of commitment, of decision, of the will. It's not just emotion. It's spiritual. It's something that comes from the very depth of our being. And it's devotion. Something about being the number one priority in our life. Wonder how I ask myself this question. I pose it to you. How would you respond to such a big ask if you were in Peter's shoes walking along that beach that day? What would your reaction be? Finally, Peter responds, and I could imagine him sort of walking along, not answering straight away, thinking, oh, goodness, that's a pretty deep question. And finally, Peter does answer. Yes, he says. Yes. Well, yes is a good start to an answer, isn't it? But then he continues, you know, I have a deep personal affection for you as a very close friend. This is a different sort of love. Basically, Peter's saying, yep, my love for you is real, but it's not agape. And so they continue walking, side by side. And again, Jesus asks the same question. I've still got this question for you, Simon, son of John. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter continues to become agitated. You can imagine it, can't you? I can, anyway. Boy, how long is this question going to haunt me? I don't want to go down this road. I denied knowing this man. There's a barrier there. I can't answer that sort of question. And so Peter, again, second time, gives exactly the same reply. Then Jesus questions Peter a third time. Listen to the question. Simon, son of John, are you my friend? It's a totally different question. It's the same word that Peter was using. Jesus reflects back to him. Do you love me with a deep personal affection like a close friend? Are you my friend, Simon, son of John? A third time, Jesus asks. I can imagine Peter at this point sort of just wanting all of this conversation to come to an end. And after that third time, Peter doesn't want to mull over anymore. Again, he's given up all the thinking stuff. He just wants to speak what's on his, without processing it. He just wants to say it. And John's gospel tells us Peter was upset on this third time. Jesus asked, are you my friend? Master, he said, you know everything. You know I'm your friend. Peter's answer starts with a different word to any other responses. He starts by acknowledging Jesus as the master. That's a new beginning to Peter's answer. But again, he still hasn't moved beyond being the friend of Jesus. But at that point, and following all the other questions and responses, Jesus gives an instruction, something like, feed my sheep. There was a change that came as they walked along the beach that morning. I don't know, I can't explain the change. I don't understand it all myself. But as I look at that event, I see again, what were the very first words Jesus ever said to Peter? If we go back to the first chapter of Mark, we have a bunch of fishermen and Jesus comes up to them and his words are, follow me. And those disciples left their nets and followed Jesus. The last verse in this saga of the encounter between Jesus and Peter concludes with the same words. Jesus simply says to Peter, forget all this other stuff. Follow me. That's your priority. Despite whatever's gone before, follow me. That's the final word, as it were, to Peter. And so today, I think Jesus still asks that same question. He comes alongside you and me, and he says, Mary, Jim, Cecil, do you love me? Do you love me with intentional spiritual devotion? Despite anything in the past, how committed are you to following me? That's a serious question. And as I thought about that question for myself, I connected it immediately to what we've shared on the platform here over the last few Sundays about the work of the Holy Spirit. That's how all of this comes together. We're about to sing a song which says, Lord, you know that I love you. Help that love to be true. Fill my life with your Spirit's power. You can't answer the question without knowing that other experience. And of course, if we pursued the biography of Peter, we'd find a few weeks later, the Holy Spirit empowered Peter to become that important church leader that was a key person in the early Christian church. Things were different from that point onwards. The song is written in the plural, but again, as we sing it together, Make it a personal one. Lord, you know that I love you. Help that love to be true. Fill my life with your Spirit's power. Today, may your will, your purpose, claim my undivided power. And as we sing these words again, they're yours and my affirmation. They're yours and my words of personal commitment this morning. We can't sing them if we don't mean them. And they're a personal prayer. And if, as we sing them, you feel that you need to come and kneel at the place of prayer or stand here, then that's fine. But again, whatever happens, it's for you to make these words your words as we sing them together.
Today, have you had a pardoning encounter with Jesus? If you would like to know more, our service is on Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Caloundra Salvation Army, 119 Sugarbag Road, Little Mountain. God bless.